Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, everybody? Zach Rosenblatt. Back here for the latest episode of the Talk is Cheap podcast. I'm here with Daryl Slater. Quick turnaround this week, so we wanted to get you guys a pod before Thursday night's game against Washington. Disclaimer, Daryl was not at the Giants game on Sunday because he had more interesting endeavors to pursue in Charlotte, North Carolina, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the game was interesting for sure in some ways. Didn't turn out positively for the Jets, but...
Not many things do, yeah.
No, but I think, I think in some ways it'll be an interesting team. But yes, I was down in Charlotte eating barbecue and incidentally also covering the Jets game.
The Sam Darnold Bowl, as you will. But yes, I mean, he missed a pretty terrible Giants performance on Sunday. I'm sure he's read about it since then. We can run through some stuff coming out of that game. I'll cover a lot of the stuff that was in the game. But suffice to say, it was a very bad performance. I mean, when you came out of, you know, your Jets haze and all the coverage you were doing, like, what would you think when you saw what the score was of the Jets?
You know, I think Steve Politi really hit it on the head. Nothing against your coverage, which was as usual mediocre at best. But Steve, hey, you know, but you gotta take what you can get. But Steve, it really had an interesting column. I thought of, you know, just kind of weeding through the details. Obviously, Daniel Jones turnover, Saquon Barkley not looking like himself. Those, you know, those are kind of apparent things. But I think if you look at that game, it's easy to say, look, the Giants really only scored, obviously, 7 points. The last six were lipstick on a pig there at the end. So, yeah, obviously some concerns about their offense, even though their line played probably better than expected against the Broncos front. Now, the one area where you kind of look at it, like Steve wrote and said, whoa, this is an eyebrow raiser, is the way that defense played. And, you know, you wrote about it after the game immediately, and Steve had a next day column on it. Like, this should scare the crap out of Giants fans if this defense is going to play this poorly against, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, who, you know, solid player, but, and now they get a quarterback in Taylor Heinicke, who started one game and is 0-1 as a starter on Thursday night in Washington, that they can't have a repeat performance of that defensive dud.
Yeah, you know, I went on a radio show earlier today, and I've been asked about this a couple times. Like, if you had said in the beginning of the season they'd be playing Teddy Bridgewater and Taylor Heinicke back to back, you would assume they would win both of those games. If they lose to Taylor Heinicke, who, you know, he's not necessarily scrubby. He almost beat the Buccaneers in the playoffs. Like, he can be scrappy, he can move around or whatever. But if you want to be taken seriously, and you start 0-2 against those two quarterbacks when you have some other quarterbacks on the schedule that are going to be a lot harder. That causes a lot of concern. And, like, in terms of the defense, like, the secondary was supposed to be the strength of this team. And I would say, you know, Jabril Peppers only played half the snaps. He wasn't very happy about it, which is something we can talk about. You know, Adoree Jackson, I don't think, had a great game. James Bradbury maybe had his worst game as a Giants corner. I think he gave up like 6 catches on 7 targets and like 65 yards or something like that. And yeah, like, the tackling was an issue. And so you had a Broncos passing attack led by Pat Shurmur, who clearly knew the defense's weakness is from coaching a lot of these guys and just exploited them. And I don't think anyone would have expected waking up on Monday morning thinking, Patrick Graham got outcoached by Pat Shurmur.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think we can put the brakes a little bit on this Patrick Graham being a coaching genius thing. Nothing against him. Maybe that's a little bit cynical, but we've heard nothing but great things about him, which okay, sure, you know. But I think we need to see a little bit more of a body of work before we deem him to be, one of the great defensive coordinators in the NFL today. I mean, he did a great job last season, and even he would say he has more to prove this year. And, you know, if this defense isn't – we talked about it on the first podcast. This should be a top 10 defense. They have the talent. They have a coach who's pretty darn sharp and well-regarded. So let's see this group go out and be a top 10 defense. If they're not, it's a disappointment. And it doesn't reflect well on Patrick Graham if they're not a top 10 defense, presuming guys stay healthy. Now, they could get hit by injuries, but, presuming guys stay healthy. And, we'll get to injuries in a bit. But, for the most part, this defense, emerged from that game healthy and, has to do a better job this week, as we said, on Thursday.
Yeah, and, Washington, you'd remove Heinicke Fitzpatrick or whatever from the equation. They have a lot of weapons. They have Terry McLaurin at receiver, who's given a lot of teams a lot of trouble. They have Antonio Gibson at running back. And they have a couple other weapons I'm blanking on at receiver. They have Logan Thomas, a tight end, a former Giant, kind of, who bounced in and off their practice squad as a quarterback a while back and has turned into, like, a better tight end in the NFL than Evan Engram, which I found kind of funny.
Yeah.
Improbable.
He was a college quarterback.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, improbable rise for him for sure at the position, but he was always a freak athlete at quarterback. Anyway, so they're not like an easy matchup on that side, but the main topic going to Thursday is, of course, going to be the same one we've had for the last year and a half or however long since I've been on this beat, and that's the offense and their inability to get anything going. And I think if week one showed us anything, and, again, like, everybody overreacts to everything week one, but it's all we have to go on. And I think it's not even an overreaction with the Giants, because this is what they were doing all last year. And Jason Garrett, again, called, like, the most bland, uninventive offense like you could possibly imagine. They opened the game with a 42-yard pass to Darius Slayton, which wasn't even necessarily the play design. It came because Denver jumped off sides, and so Daniel aired it out. He found Darius Slayton 42 yards. On the next play, the Giants ran a reverse to, or an end around or whatever, to Kadarius Toney. He was out in the field, and it was obvious that he was going to be the one getting the ball, because that's the only time they're going to put that guy in the field. So it's not tricking anybody. So they did it. Nobody blocked Von Miller for some reason. If you watch the clip, it's really, I think Brian Baldinger actually tweeted out short a little bit ago, like, just how bad it was, because Kyle Rudolph, like, did like a pretend block to make him think they were going to block him. Then he, like, ran out to go as if he was running on a route or something like that. And Nate Solder just completely ignored Miller. So he gets into the backfield. They lose 6 yards on that play. They run it again on the next play, second and long, which is one of Jason Garrett's favorite things to do. and they get tackled for a loss. So they go from field goal range to out of field goal range, and they have to punt it. And this is all just in the first drive. And I think Denver goes back around and scores on their end on that drive. And then another one that sticks out to me is Logan Ryan forces a fumble deep in the Giants' own territory. So the Giants are, they're pretty backed up. And rather than, like, trying to, like, make some plays and get them moving, the Giants call, like, a very conservative, scared sort of, plays. They do a run on the first play, gains, like, 1 yard maybe. They do a short pass attempt to Eli Penny, which goes incomplete, the fullback out of the backfield. And then they attempt a pass to Kyle Rudolph, which completes for, like, a couple yards. And Kyle Rudolph might be the slowest player on the roster. So they played scared there. I think they played scared. Their entire offensive game plan was to be scared of taking big shots downfield because the Broncos are good at defending them. But you still have to take the shots. Like, this offense is not good enough. And Saquon clearly wasn't himself yet, to the point where, like, the running attack was clearly not there. And they still kept trying to do all these short plays. And Jason Garrett, like, just the way the routes they were running, and they weren't calling plays for Kenny Golladay. And it's just like, I just don't get what that guy's plan is. And at a certain point, Judge deserves criticism for that too. But I mean, you and I have talked about Jason Garrett, and we both obviously thought he should have been fired after last season. And there's been some debate about whether it's too late to fire him now or whatever. But, like, what do you think about just the idea that they didn't change anything from last year? So it's not about the players, clearly, right?
I thought Jason Garrett was – well, this just shows that I don't really know anything. I'm an idiot. But I thought when they hired him, I was like, oh, it's a pretty good hire,
It makes sense. Work out. Yeah.
Oops. Yeah. It has not worked out. It has worked out, rather poorly. you know, on account of his, you know, uncreative ways, lack of creativity, among other things, and certainly the talent and lack thereof on the offensive line has limited what they can do. I think if, you know, just talking to Trent Dilfer this week, he talked about, you know, how if you have a bad offensive line or a suspect offensive line, now the Giants, they do. I mean, they played pretty well in the opener, but offensive line wise, but, you know, having a line that's not really solid, it limits what the play caller can do. So that's kind of a caveat. But yeah, I mean, I think there's not really many excuses for him now. I mean, he has playmakers. He has Kenny Golladay. He has Daniel Jones in the second year in his offense. Like, you know, it's time to deliver some results. And I think if you look at this, you know, the thought process for not firing in mid-year would be, okay, well, you can't change the offense. You don't have to change the offense. Like, what are you talking? Like, no one's asking you to just run Urban Meyer's offense all of a sudden. You know, like, you have other coaches on your staff who could presumably do a, you know, there's do a different job, better job of calling the plays within the offense that you already have. I don't necessarily think it's the offense per se, right? I think they have enough plays in the offense, right? To they have deep shots, right? In their playbook.
I haven't seen the playbook.
I guess
everybody points to this, and so Freddie Kitchens called the plays against the Browns, and it's kind of like a weird one to look at because number one, they got killed, and number two, Colt McCoy was a quarterback. So like in both directions, yes. I think it's hard to like evaluate it, but they did take more shots down the field that day. And maybe that's just Joe Judge wanting to make a considered effort that day, or it's Freddie or something, but they judges put Freddie in line to replace Jason Garrett at some point, but because he basically promoted him this offseason to where he kind of has his hands everywhere. I mean, he would be the obvious one, and I don't know. I mean, I get it. It was 1 week. They're not going to fire him after 1 week.
Right.
If they come out and again, don't score any points on Thursday, and then they come out in week three, you know, maybe they don't want to fire him because they have a road game in New Orleans that week. So maybe you go through 4 weeks. If after 4 weeks, the offense is still not scoring points, like it, something has to change. You can't change your quarterback at this point. Mike Glennon is not a guy you can start. I mean, they have who they have on the offensive line. They decided to keep all those guys. So they decided the coaching was the thing. And I mean, I saw a stat. I'm going to butcher it, but it was something along the lines of like Jason Garrett is the offense has scored like less than 20 points. I forget what the number of games, like the majority of the games he has coached, they have scored 20 points or less. And they've only scored more than 23, I think like once or twice. And the one time they scored 30 was against the Cowboys last year. And one of those touchdowns was a defensive touchdown. So just like all the evidence of that is bad. I mean, you keep seeing all these analysts, especially today randomly, because they probably all just been watching All-22 or whatever. Like Dan Orlovsky had a tweet. I can't even read it out because it's Dan generally knows what he's talking about. I think he said, God bless the Giants offense. It's just painful to watch scheme wise. Number one, why are you doing the things you're doing? And why are you the way that you are? There is a player given an advantage because of your scheme/call, which I think is a big thing. Like the idea of scheming a receiver open is not something Jason Garrett has done. And number three, can we change the launch point of the QB to something other than behind the center? So, I mean, these are like experts. So, like you and I, you know, we're not football guys in quotes or whatever, but it's pretty obvious to see that Jason Garrett is not like, you know, calling plays to suit his offense. I think Nick Sirianni from the Eagles had a good quote today about how you build the scheme around your players. You don't build the players around your scheme, essentially was the idea. And the Giants, it seems like, just haven't done that for a long time, actually. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's a good approach. We'll see if Nick Sirianni winds up being a good coach for the Eagles. But I think, you know, that big picture approach is the way you have to do it in the NFL these days. Because, you know, you're never going to necessarily have, you know, everybody you want to, you know, run the offense the way ideally you would, right? So you have to kind of adjust, and we just haven't seen a lot of flexibility from Jason Garrett.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of the positive end, I mean, first I should say Nate Solder was awful at right tackle. And Matt Parrott, it wasn't much better when he subbed in for him, so that's going to be a problem all year. We'll get into the offensive line because it's going to look a little different on Thursday night, I think, once we start previewing, but in terms of like positive stuff, I will say the offensive line played pretty well in pass protection. Andrew Thomas had one of his better games. It was huge. I think Chain Lemieux, before he left the game, was playing pretty well. Nick Gates was solid. Will Hernandez wasn't great. But that group, you take what you can get. And Sterling Shepard kind of showed what he has been shown throughout training camp. He was their best offensive player by far. I am a little concerned about Saquon. You kind of wrote about this today. Like, they're easing him back in, and he clearly was rusty and not quite the Saquon that you want. He wasn't really hitting holes. He wasn't really running north to south. And he's not a guy right now that's going to, you know, break tackles, I would say. So he didn't really make an impact. It almost felt like he was a decoy out there in a way. And I don't really know if his role is going to be much bigger on Thursday. He played about 50% of the snaps.
I would expect more of the same. I mean, you're talking about a five-day window here, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, two games in 5 days, and a guy coming off serious knee surgery and a serious knee injury. So, yeah, obviously, but like I wrote today, the Giants are doing the right and smart thing by not rushing him back with an enormous workload. Now, here's the problem with that. They're going to be through two of their 17 games, and this guy will probably play a total of about half the snaps. And so there's the problem with that for a running back is finding rhythm. You know, Saquon even acknowledged it. You know, he hasn't played in a full calendar year, essentially. And so he needs to find rhythm. And the way a guy does that is by getting his normal amount of reps or getting a decent number of reps and not just 10 carries and one catch on three targets, which is what he got in the opener. So that's a challenge for him. How does he knock off the rust and find rhythm? Two things he has to do when he is not being given the reps, you know, necessary to do those things. So at some point they're going to have to unleash him, and maybe that's week three. And with the extra rest they're going to get after this Thursday night game. But these first two games are almost like, you know, an ease in period. And again, from a medical standpoint and from a prudent standpoint, that from a, you know, judgment standpoint, that's prudent, I think. But it comes with its drawbacks.
Yeah. And I would say that Devontae Booker didn't really show anything to make you feel like he can carry the load either, which is concerning. One more thing about that game that I want to bring up. We talked about Kadarius Toney last week. I don't really get what they're doing with him. I know he's really raw and he didn't practice much in camp, so they want to get him some reps. But the way they used him just like didn't make any sense to me. Like I know every team goes in with a plan of what they're going to do on like their first drive or whatever, first two drives. Like they have those plays set out. And they practiced them all week. But they brought him out, and it was pretty obvious that he was going to get the ball. He did. He lost 6 yards. He was in for another play, and they did the same thing again, and I don't think he gained any yards on that. So it's not like they're bringing him out there, and then they're not giving him the ball. So now you have the defense aware that, okay, that guy's out there. He's probably going to get it on a reverse. And then he didn't play almost the entire rest of the game until garbage time, and he played 5 snaps total, I think. Like, this is a team that needs to win. And I don't really get, you know, trying this gimmick thing and – you know, Jason Garrett clearly isn't creative enough to, you know, make it work with him, but you can't just put him out there and everybody on the field knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's not ideal. I mean, that's...
If he's not ready to play, then he's not ready to play, and don't play him.
And again, getting back to something that Trent Dilfer mentioned with the Jets, who also have problems on their offensive line, and he was talking about how to protect a young quarterback, and he said, look, you know, you have to run a wide variety of plays and not be, the bottom line is not be predictable. And now that's not rocket science. Of course, no offense wants to be predictable, but especially if you have a suspect offensive line. And again, the Giants offensive line played pretty well in the opener. Does that mean they're going to have a good season? No. I mean, I think we need to see more, but the way you kind of protect an offensive line, and we'll get into how shorthanded they're going to be on Thursday, at least obviously at one spot, is shaking it up, variety of plays, not being predictable, and putting Kadarius Toney out there in that spot, as you said, is the very definition of predictable.
Yeah, and so I'm curious to see if they learn from their mistake of how they used him the other day. Like, I don't even have an issue with you playing him throughout the game, but to do it on the first drive and like not even adjust out of that after, and for them to do it right after the 42-yard completion when they should be trying to score, like, so you're doing a play behind the line of scrimmage. I don't really understand. So it'll be interesting to see how they use him, how they use Saquon, if they start getting Kenny Golladay more involved, all that stuff. Because, I mean, it's week two, so calling it a must-win seems ridiculous. But if the Giants fall to 0-2, you know, maybe you can beat the Falcons. But then, you know, they have some tough games coming in this first half of the season. And this isn't a team that's built to come back from being down. They can't be winning again.
It would be a problem. I mean, look, losing to Teddy Bridgewater and Taylor Heinicke would be the issue here. I mean, 0-2, not all 0-2 is created equal. I think this would be a particularly concerning 0-2. That's why I think Giants fans are looking at it as a should win. You know, the Giants should win this game. Mathematically, is it a must win? No. I mean, you know, morale wise, is it a must win? No, probably not. You know, but just, you know, if you look at this, you say they lose this game, where are the wins coming from? You know, unless they find a way to drastically turn around the problems. Like, if Heinicke dices them up, I mean, my goodness, like, you know, what is the rest of the season going to bring unless Patrick Graham can get things turned around? Now, that's a big what if, because, you know, it's not like Heinicke is very good or proven. So,
yeah,
you know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. All right. So that with that, we could spin ahead now. So the injury report came out today since the game is tomorrow. Evan Engram is going to be out, which is what it was expected. Kyle Rudolph didn't really show me in week one that he's ready to make a huge impact. He's a little slow at this stage of his career. And his blocking wasn't especially great. So you hope that maybe he was just easing in after missing most of camp. But the big one, I guess, would be left guard Shane Lemieux. He had a knee injury early in camp. I'm blanking on what exactly the knee injury was. Dan Duggan had reported it. But it's serious enough that he had the option of getting surgery. He chose not to. He's going to play through it. And he played through it for 17 snaps, and then he didn't play the rest of the game, and then now he's out, which is not a great sign. And then my feeling about how they approach the offensive line tomorrow is that it's going to look a lot different. I think it's a very good possibility that if he doesn't start the game, I think center Nick Gates might move over to left guard at some point, and they put in Billy Price at center, a guy they traded for from the Bengals. They also have Ben Bredesen, who they traded for from the Ravens. So I think Bredesen and Price are going to see the field. So you're going to see kind of a new alignment, and you're doing that against, you know, arguably one of the best, if not, you know, one of the top three or four best defensive lines in the NFL. They have Chase Young and Montez Sweat coming off the edge. They have Jonathan Allen and Matthew Ioannidis, and there's one more I'm blanking on the interior, and those guys are all studs. So this is going to be a real tough challenge for guys that haven't really played with this offensive line very much yet, or Nick Gates moving over to a position that he's probably more natural at guard, But yeah, you know, I mean, this isn't an offensive line that has a lot of strengths already. So if they're already shuffling in week two, that's not really ideal.
No, I mean, I think, like you said, I mean, the straight up replacement option is Bredesen at left guard, and then you keep Nick Gates at center, who's been pretty solid at center, even though, like you said, that's a new position for him, or was when he moved over there, you know, last year. And then there's the drastic option, which is Gates to left guard and Price to center. And you know, Price is a guy who, I guess the Bengals, right? And they decided to move on from him, and, you know, former high draft pick. And just
by the way, they traded BJ Hill for him, and BJ Hill had 2 sacks for the Bengals in week one.
Yes. So number 21 overall draft pick. I was looking that up just to be sure, but, yeah, I mean, so it depends on how many waves they want to make in terms of new faces. I mean, do they want to just put Bredesen in there at left guard and roll with it? Or do they want to move Gates over and then make another move? So this Lemieux injury is going to be an issue all season, it seems. And so, you know, and then Evan Engram, the problem with, you know, look, he can't stay on the field. I mean, he played 16 games last year, but if you look at the totality of his career, this will be the 66th possible game he could have played in, you know, 16 in the first 4 years, obviously, and then 2 this year. He's played in 50 of them. So he's now missed 16 games, counting this Thursday night, throughout his career. And that's with him playing all 16 games last year in his fourth year. So obviously not a great way for him to start things here on the fifth year option as he plays for a contract next off season. So there's that. And then, you know, I think that they would like to think that Rudolph could be a somewhat decent replacement for Engram, but look, I mean, Lemieux is not a great necessarily proven player, but I mean, the drop off is fairly significant there if you talk about having to either play Price at center or having to play Bredesen at left guard.
Yeah, I mean in theory, you know, I guess Bredesen was drafted ahead of Lemieux last year, but he's a guy that the Ravens were willing to just dump right before the season, essentially. I mean, they did get like a fourth, and the Giants got back like a fifth or whatever it was, but I think we mentioned this last week, but the irony of them getting Bredesen is that it was they cut Kevin Zeitler, which is why the Ravens didn't need Bredesen anymore. But yeah, I mean, the Giants could really use Zeitler right now. But yeah, so the offensive line, I would say, is a concern. And I talked about it earlier, but they really just need to get Kenny Golladay involved much earlier in this game. He's a guy that, you know, interestingly, like, he he was way more honest than you would expect out of a guy coming into a season. Multiple times he told us that he thought the offense would start slow because all the pieces were out, and the offense started slow. And then, you know, this week he said he thinks the offense can be explosive on Thursday. So if we want to listen to Kenny Golladay, you know, we should have listened to him before, I guess. And if he's right, then they can win this game.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate the honesty there. I mean, I think any one of us could have looked at it and said it's likely they're going to start slow. Yeah. And sure enough, they did. I don't think that necessarily comes as a surprise, considering how few reps these guys had together in training camp. Golladay, especially, with Daniel Jones and Kadarius Toney also as well. So and you talk about Saquon Barkley getting, you know, working his way back too. So yeah, I think that's to be expected. So now they go out and play another really good defense here in Washington, and a front certainly and led by Chase Young that could make life miserable for Daniel Jones. And yeah, there's a lot of ways this game could go sideways for the Giants, for sure. I think the defense obviously has to do their part against a super inexperienced quarterback and Heinicke, but you could see some spots in this game where it's definitely concerning for the Giants.
And I should say, and I alluded to this earlier, but if they lose this game, the offense is bad again. I think at some point we all have to point at least part of our fingers at Joe Judge. I mean, he's part of the offensive game plan. When he talked to us the other day, Tuesday, he didn't really he made it sound like they might have a similar game plan to what they had against Denver, being very conservative, not really taking as many shots downfield because the defense they're playing is good at stopping them, which doesn't make sense to me. And so if their offense just comes out and is flat again, and number one, you know, he decided to bring back Jason Garrett and he decided to keep this offensive line the way it was. And, you know, I think he has a lot of influence in the players they bring in and the plays they call. Like he skirted criticism for most of last year from a lot of the public, just because, I mean, he wasn't calling plays, but I think you're starting to see the cracks a little bit, because I've seen fans get a little more upset with him in this last week. He had that moment with the challenge flag, which was pretty embarrassing. He threw a challenge flag on a play that can't be challenged and lost the timeout in the second half. If they hadn't been so bad the rest of the way, that could have been pretty costly. But, like, what do you think about that? Like, at a certain point, he has to, you know, take some of the blame of what's going on here.
For sure. You can't have it both ways. One of the reasons why he kind of skated is because he doesn't call the offense or the defense, right? So people look at him as this leader. And, you know, I'm sure he's a fine leader, I guess, right? And, you know, take no nonsense guy, doesn't take any BS, and whipping these guys into shape, and that's all well and good. But if you're going to be a CEO coach, which he is, right, you have to take take the heat for, you know, the CEO type stuff. Everything trickles up, flows up, if you will. All the decisions kind of come back to him, or do come back to him. Certainly, you know, we've seen his imprint on some of these moves that the Giants have made. And, you know, obviously Dave Gettleman is still the general manager, but, you know, it's clear that the judge has some say, a significant say in what the Giants do. So, yeah, I mean, we can knock Gettleman for some of the things he's done in the past, and Nate Solder contract. Obviously, Joe Judge had nothing to do with that. But if you talk particularly about the offensive line with the way they did not address guard this offseason after cutting Kevin Zeitler, yeah, I think that gets back to Joe Judge, certainly, because, you know, he approves or certainly has a significant input with a lot of these moves that they do or don't make. So, and yes, obviously, he's... You know, he was, you know, whether you want to call it paired with Jason Garrett, but he decided to keep Jason Garrett after last season. He, you know, worked with him certainly for a year, saw what he was all about, even if there was a strong push from above for Garrett to be the offensive coordinator for Judge in year one. He certainly, Judge could have made a decision there to move on. He decided not to, and has thrown his support behind Garrett, and that flows back to Judge for sure as the CEO coach. So I don't think he can have it both ways and be a guy who is, you know, this distanced leader from the game planning stuff in terms of the offense, defense, calling plays, and then just not take any responsibility. Not to say he's not taking responsibility, but I'm sure he's willing to take heat. But in terms of deserving the heat, I think we're beginning to see, as you said, a little bit more going in Judge's direction that way. And, you know, maybe they go out and win by 14, 20 points on Thursday, and everyone kind of forgets about all this for a week. But, you know, it's a week-to-week league, as they say. So I think, you know, this has a chance, if they lose this game, to really sour some things, and you'll really start to see for the first time, I would think, sentiment within the fan base, and you're seeing it a little bit already, kind of go, you know, go a little bit more skeptically against Judge. Maybe that's the right word.
Yeah, and if, so if they're 0-2, how many years in a row is it now that they've been 0-2? I can't remember.
That's a great question. I mean, the stat I dug up the other day, in terms of their slow starts, yeah. I mean, even beyond just 0-2, since the Giants' last winning season, you know, the ALS had a winning season in 2016. Since then, starting in 2017, their record in September and October is 5-26. So that gets beyond just 0-2. I mean, you're talking about being bad in the first 2 months of the season.
Okay, so if you don't count the one year they made the playoffs in McAdoo, they've been 0-2 every year dating back to 2013.
That's an insane stat.
Yeah. So that's 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18.
Just not 16. Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be
13, like, 14, and 15.
It would be 8 of 9 years, basically, if they do that again this year.
Yeah. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
And this would drop them.
Giants fans certainly are frustrated by that.
I mean, and this would drop them to 5-27 in the first 2 months of the season. And that's just over the. I could go back to those previous years that you said. I just went back to their last winning season, but I mean, you're starting. I think it's a here we go again thing, maybe, for Jets and Giants fans, because Jets are 10-29 since their last winning season in the months of September and October. So you know, those sink your season. I mean, I know everyone talks about how strong the Giants finished last year. They started 1-7. They started 1-7. Like, I mean, that's almost impossible to overcome. And guess what? They didn't overcome it. Like, yeah, I mean, they played to the end of the season in the playoff race because they had a bad division.
Well, yeah, but they missed the playoffs because they didn't win one of those 8 games.
Right, right. But they missed the playoffs. Exactly. They missed the playoffs, but they went 5-3 down the stretch. And they went 1-7 to start the year. Like, yeah, I mean, they came close because they were in a bad division. But again, this is how you sink your season. I mean, they were 1-6 in September and October last year. Then they lost the first game in November. They rattled off 4 straight wins after that. But you can't necessarily make your season in September and October. But I think certainly if you have that kind of really crummy start, you can more often than not. I think last season being an outlier, you can just sink the whole darn thing in the first 2 months of the season.
It's pretty hard to get back from a 1-7 hole.
Yeah.
You have to be in the worst division of all time to do that, which they were.
It's not happening this year. I mean, it didn't happen last year. They didn't make the playoffs. But, like, yeah. I mean, if they start 1-6, 1-7 again, it's done. The season's over.
Yeah. I agree. So, what was your prediction for this week? I can't remember what I officially submitted. Let me look.
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. Let's see. Talking here, I'll make sure it matches up with what I guess those we're publishing.
Have
those.
The Giants winning. I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I have them winning as well. We'll have that up on the site later tonight if people want to check that out. We have all of our picks as usual up there. And do you have yours in front of me? I'm going through and trying to find
it up right now.
I think everyone on our staff picked the Giants. Picked.
That makes me feel even worse about it. I have the Giants winning 13-10. As you can tell, I'm not confident in their offense. So, and if they win, I see their defense kind of winning it for them, essentially.
I'm on the same. For some reason, I picked the Giants 20-13. I don't know if they're going to score 20, maybe 17-13 if I had to do that again.
It's hard to predict them scoring touchdowns, honestly. And it's funny, the one thing we somehow like skipped over, probably because we've talked about it so many times, that Daniel Jones turned the ball over again in the red zone. So as long as he keeps doing that, like, I don't believe they can do anything on offense.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, maybe I'm thinking here in 20-13 that he has one of his rare turnover-free games. And
I will say, against Washington is when he's had all of his good games in his career.
Yep, exactly right. So 20-13, maybe 17-13, I think a low-scoring defensive game. You know, and in terms of Jones, he's got 40 turnovers in 28 games. And, like, so I was curious, and I went and crunched the numbers. So he's turned over 1.43 times a game. And I won't go through all the numbers, but that's a higher rate than Sam Darnold had with the Jets. And it's a higher rate than Mark Sanchez had with the Jets, even if you count Mark Sanchez's all of his games, regular season and playoffs, or if you just count the regular season. So, you know, Darnold and Sanchez especially were known for being turnover machines. And through this, through 28 games of his career and 40 turnovers, Daniel Jones is turning the ball over more than either of those guys.
Yeah. I mean, he has 40 turnovers in his career, which is the most in the NFL. I think he's lost 18 fumbles, and only one other quarterback, Carson Wentz, has even fumbled the ball at all 18 times.
Crazy.
And he's fumbled it 30 times on his own, like without losing all of them. So like it's like an abnormal amount to the point where it's – I mean, he fumbled it in college too. Like this has always been a problem. And at a certain point, everybody needs to accept he's not going to get better at it. And you just hope that – the thing is, like his rookie year, he turned the ball over a lot, but he also produced a lot of points. Like, he had 24 touchdown passes. He had 11 last year, and he had one last week. So if you almost are more okay with the turnovers if they were actually like taking shots. But the Giants are so scared on offense to do anything that they don't even do that, so they don't score and he turns the ball over. So it's like a vicious cycle, I guess. But all right, we can wrap up on that. We'll get back to you guys on our podcast next week. It'd be nice if we could do it after something more positive, but this Giants team likes to make us be negative all the time. We don't do it on purpose. But on that note, we'll wrap up there. Make sure you're subscribed. If you're not subscribed already, we're on all the podcast apps, and we'll talk to you guys next week.